The Doctor of Discernment is on the air.
I don't know where I would get the truth if it weren't for you.
That is outrageous. Outrageous.
Dispensing a daily dose of common sense, no prescription required.
Doesn't it give you kind of a shudder of electricity through you to be in the same room with me?
Don't try to be funny, will you, meathead?
This is the Greg Belford Show.
We have visited with Representative Kevin Jensen a number of different times on a variety of different issues. We have talked to him both about legislative issues, and we have talked to him about previously about handgun training issues, certification, that kind of thing. Incredibly knowledgeable about all that stuff. And we'll touch on kind of both of these this morning. Kevin Jensen joins us on the line. Great to have a chance to visit with you again, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you. And thank you for having me on, because I think these are two very important subjects for people to start to become aware with.
Well, no kidding. I read through the letter, and you touch on it, and there are some pitfalls here for people to be aware of in regard to completing a form to buy a firearm. Let's talk about that. I'm not even sure where to start.
Well, the interesting thing is, with the passage of IM-26, there's a lot of things that we talked about with the public as far as the growing marijuana and providing product and creating a registry for names of people that are going to get their medical marijuana card. And one of the things that, of course, I'm an enhanced concealed carry instructor, and I've been doing this for about 6 years. I'm also a firearms enthusiast, and a former gun dealer myself, had a sporting goods store for a while. There's a form called, if you've bought a gun in the last, since probably 1968, there's a 4473 form, it's called, that when you buy a gun from a gun dealer, you have to fill this form out. And there's always been a question on there that says, are you an unlawful user of drugs, or are you addicted to drugs, or if you're addicted to alcohol? And if you check that box, yes, you're not supposed to be able to finish the firearms transaction. But what was added recently, and I'll just read it real quickly, it says, it's question 21, subsection E on that form. It says, are you an unlawful user of or addicted to marijuana or any depressant, stimulant, narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance? And then in bold letters it says, warning, the use or possession of marijuana remains unlawful under federal law, regardless of whether it has been legalized or decriminalized for medical or recreational purposes in the state where you reside. Well, this is pretty black and white. There's only two correct answers on this form, and it's yes or no. If you say yes, then the dealer cannot finish the firearms transaction. You fill out the form and you leave without the gun, because by law they can't sell it to you. If you have a medical marijuana card and you check no, technically now you've committed perjury on a federal form, which could cost you 10 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. And I tell this to people, and some people just kind of roll their eyes and scoff at that, and they say, well, how likely is that to happen? Well, if you give me a minute on this one, I can kind of clarify. A few weeks ago, the state Department of Health put out an RFP, or request for proposals, for an independent agency to create the registry and to maintain the registry of people with medical marijuana cards. Well, because it's not a government agency, the big question comes up is this covered under HIPAA? Is your medical marijuana card protected by HIPAA? Well, because it's still illegal under federal law, there's a real gray area there. Some of your medical records that they might collect could be considered a valid protection under HIPAA, and some might not. The only people that have, and this part would pertain to anybody with a concealed carry permit. Only the state of South Dakota, the Secretary of State, can keep a list of everyone that has a has a pistol permit. But if the medical marijuana cards are not protected under HIPAA, under any kind of an investigation, law enforcement could compare those two lists. And if you have a medical marijuana card, technically, under federal law, you can't even own a gun because you are violating a federal law. And that's really where it becomes the harshest understanding for a lot of people, because once you have that medical marijuana card, if somebody knocks on your door with a federal warrant and says, you know, you have guns because we found your record at a gun shop, now you're in violation of that federal law, and technically they could walk in and take all your guns. And I don't think during the whole discussion of the Amendment A and IM-26, this was, you know, I tried to bring this subject up a few times and people pretty much just ignored it. So, but now it is a reality. July 1st, if you get that medical marijuana card and check yes on the box, you don't get the gun. If you check no, you're, I guess, at risk, and each person's going to have to make that choice.
The it's a little bit staggering, in fact, when you, as you talk about this. Kevin Jensen is my guest, a representative of District 16. And as he mentioned, he's been involved in firearms training and safety. But there are other problems in regard to this as well, right? I mean, this isn't the only part where you may get might get stuck on.
With the medical marijuana card?
Yes. Yes.
That is the biggest issue. The other things that we do not have any clear law on, is if we do know that if you're intoxicated and you're caught with a loaded firearm, we know what the laws are on that, and that's a firearms violation. What we don't know, again, is if you are under the influence of marijuana and you have a loaded firearm with you, our law needs to be cleaned up a little bit, in my belief, because we talk about, there's two different terms we use, and one is called intoxication, which is basically anything that that alters your mood or behavior, and intoxicated is legally intoxicated, like for alcohol, it's 0.08 or 0.04. And really, those are only defined in motor vehicle and boating code. Nowhere do we find the definition of intoxicated in firearms law or in criminal code. So, yeah, it's going to be a gray area to whether you can even, if you're using medical marijuana, if you can even if you have a gun and you circumvent the, or you don't adhere to the law that says you can't have one, if you get caught with one, then there's multiple issues that you face.
Now, Kevin, you've been involved in, with folks that own firearms for quite a long time. How common is this? I mean, how much are you hearing that people are just kind of scoffing and not taking it very seriously?
Unfortunately, far too many. I know there's a number of counties. I think Gregory County, Pennington, Custer, Fall River, a number of counties have declared what they call Second Amendment sanctuary counties. Some of them are just resolutions, but some of them have gone as far as to say that they will expend no county resources whatsoever, meaning the sheriff's department or any kind of resources from the county to assist federal government in confiscating federal weapons. So what that would, this is, again, gets to be a gray area. If local resources are not helping to enforce federal law, and we just pick and choose one federal law, which, to tell you the truth, I go along with that. I think the Second Amendment in South Dakota is very clear that the right of the people to defend themselves shall not be infringed. It doesn't say anything about a militia. When we get into the national argument, we talk about militia, and to me, that's absolutely totally bogus, too. But in South Dakota, our Second Amendment is extremely clear. It is the right of the people, period. The government cannot grant rights. Rights are what we are inherently born with. And so when we try to restrict people's rights, it comes down to restricting people. I'm just jump back to the militia idea a little bit. You cannot grant in the Bill of Rights or in the Constitution rights to a government agency, and that's what the militia is. So when we look at these counties that now are saying that they will not assist any federal law enforcement in the confiscation, that I think doesn't really help the situation, because a lot of people now say, well, the local people aren't going to help. There's only so many FBI agents, only so many marshals. But there is the ability for all those federal agencies to deputize or to bring people on and add additional resources. Now, out here in South Dakota, it's probably not going to be as big a deal as it might be in some states. But you know, I do know that in Florida and Illinois and a couple other states that have marijuana laws, you know, marijuana freedom or whatever you want to call it, that there actually have been court cases where people have lost. In fact, the Ninth Circuit Court, which is the most liberal court in the country, has upheld that law and confiscation of weapons. Kind of no surprise that they're anti-gun, but it is a little bit of a surprise because, you know, the Fourth Amendment rights of, you know, illegal search and seizure, which, you know, I could branch off in a lot of different areas on this, because the Supreme Court just ruled 9-0 that unwarranted search and seizure is unconstitutional. But as you know, as we go forward as a state, I would like to see our state become a sanctuary state that protects the Second Amendment rights of the people, because I think our Second Amendment rights really trump what the federal government would have us believe that they have control over. So,
Representative Kevin Jensen is my guest this morning. He's a representative from District 16. So how much conversation do you expect this to get then in the future in the state legislature? Obviously, you want to clean up some of these issues. What kind of reaction are you getting, Kevin?
Well, there's a number of legislators that, you know, we all kind of keep track of each other over the summer. We compare notes. In fact, I'm writing some bills right now, and one of the bills I'm having our research council look at is how we could word a Second Amendment sanctuary bill to make it, you know, acceptable to those that are, you know, less friendly in our legislature to firearms. You know, probably in a minute or two or a few minutes, we'll branch off a little bit into the new self-defense laws. And I have talked to some senators that were adamantly against the bill until recently. I had a conversation with them and explained to them a couple situations. And they said, well, that's just not right. And I agree. I said, yeah, you're right. But you didn't vote for my bill.
Right.
And, you know, and I there are quite a few, you know, I could roughly half of our legislature right now is leaning towards some type of a sanctuary bill. We did try to pass one. I think Senator John Wick last year authored one, and it kind of died in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Which, given the nature of some of the bills that were killed in judiciary last year on the Senate side, it didn't surprise me. They were pretty hard on any gun bills last year, or any, you know, anything to do with firearms.
So, let's talk about these new self-defense laws. Then, what would you like to see, and what are the problems that we're currently having?
Well, we do have House Bill 1212, which was my bill, and then Senator John Wick carried it in the Senate. And 1212 got a little bit of press and a little bit of notoriety because everybody wanted to characterize it as a stand-your-ground law, and so many people think stand-your-ground laws is a license to just shoot anybody indiscriminately. Just if you see somebody breaking the law, you can shoot them. And it just is absolutely false and untrue, and people really, really need to understand that what we did do is we took Florida law, stand your ground law, and I trimmed it down so it matches our current law in South Dakota, but adds a couple more features. We have had, since 1890, is back as far as I can research it, the laws that we live under today for self-defense go back to 1890. So we've been living under the same laws for 130 years. And as a concealed carry instructor, I get all kinds of questions about, oh, can I do this and can I do that? And so much of it is all gray area. Every scenario is just a little bit different. But when we look at some of the old laws, a lot of people don't understand that if somebody's in your living room, they have certain rights, but if they're in your garage, you don't have the same rights to defend yourself. And people kind of laugh when I say this. Well, the reason for that is in 1890, there weren't too many attached garages, so it was never a concern. Had we had garages attached to our buildings, I'm sure they probably would have included that. But we have always had, from 1890s forward, what we call no duty to retreat. And no duty to retreat is the same thing as stand your ground. I mean, it's a little bit, it's difference in language, but it's absolutely the same idea. And we've always had the right to protect ourselves against, protect ourselves and our property and our loved ones. In fact, if you're a codified law geek, you can look up 22.18.4, and that's where all this starts. Basically, we have three paragraphs that define almost all of our self-defense laws. And because there are so many scenarios that can possibly happen, and we can look at non-deadly force away from the house, at home, protecting real property and personal property, then we can also branch all of those into deadly force. You know, when can you use deadly force away from the home or at home or protecting real property or personal property? And each section, what we did is took each section of those and put it into a separate section of code. When the governor signed back in January 30th, 2019, when she signed the what we call constitutional carry, and that's kind of a misnomer. It's actually permitless carry. You don't need a permit in South Dakota. That involved everybody. I mean, anybody that comes here from any other state now has to adhere to our laws, but they can carry concealed here. If the basic test is, if you can legally buy a gun in your home residence or your home territory, you can carry concealed in South Dakota. So I advise people in my classes, when you're traveling to other states, make sure you fully understand the laws in that state, because once you leave the border of South Dakota, you are in the jurisdiction of that state's laws, so you have to obey those. And after teaching our laws for quite a while, I started thinking, you know, I wonder what people think about South Dakota when they read our laws, because they're kind of difficult to understand. But we've always had, with the no duty to retreat to protect property, it's our laws, current law says any person is justified in the use of force or violence against another person when the person reasonably believes such conduct is necessary to prevent trespass, criminal behavior, or any of that. But then it breaks off and it says that we can to use justified in use of deadly force. Then it takes us to a couple more laws, and one of them I always thought was a little bit interesting. In the middle of it, it says that we can protect your husband, wife, parent, child, master, mistress, or servant if there's a reasonable ground to apprehend a design to commit a felony. So when you read that, I tell people, yeah, you can protect your servants. How cliche is that? Or how old? Yeah, or your
right.
mistress. Or your mistress, you know. So when I want people to come to South Dakota, I want them to obey our laws. I'm a law and order guy. I know our law enforcement community wants them to obey the laws. So what we did is we broke each section down and clarified it so it's easier to understand. There's two big differences that will happen on July 1st. Under current law, if you are accosted by somebody and there is no threat of imminent great bodily harm or the fear of loss of life, you cannot display a weapon. You can't present a weapon. In fact, there's a court case that's pending right now. I won't mention the area because it's still, I have been called on this one. There was a young man walking down the street. He was not physically attacked so much as he was afraid of the physical attack, because these people were really getting very angry with him and kind of pushing kind of a simple assault situation. He pulled out his pistol, did not point it at anybody, pointed it at the ground, and they all ran away. They called the local law enforcement, and now that young man, he's in his 20s, is facing three counts of felony aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and each one of those could put him in prison for a long time, federal prison, because it's a felony, a federal violation also.
Well, that really goes to how people need to understand the law. If you're going to carry a firearm, that you really need to understand the law, because in the heat of the moment, you're not going to have time to research it.
Exactly. In fact, it's totally off most people's radar. We have, before the permitless carry was signed into law, we had 109,000 people in South Dakota. Basically, one in every six people in this state had a concealed carry permit. That's dropped down to about 85,000 now, I think, because of people didn't renew now that they, once they didn't really have to have one. But I can guarantee you probably the 8,000 or 9,000 people that have gone through the concealed carry classes around the state are probably the only ones that are pretty familiar. And I, sometimes I think some of our instructors don't, you know, I don't want to disparage anybody, but I think some of our instructors don't take enough time on this part of the class, and partially because they've never been trained in use of force. I was law enforcement for a while. I was trained in law enforcement use of force, which is actually a little different standard than civilian use of force. But people just don't understand when they can pull a gun and when they can't. Under the new law, we can use the threat of force, which means you can present a weapon as long as it's not, as long as you're not using it in an offensive manner. So if you have a reasonable fear that somebody's going to create great bodily harm or somebody is going to actually try to kill you, then sometimes, at least in Florida, what they found is that they find that 90% of the time when you display it, when you present or display a weapon, it stops the crime, that they don't. You don't ever – nobody needs to actually pull the trigger.
Right.
But under current law, basically, you know, it has to be down to the point where you think you're going to be killed or, you know, maimed greatly before you can actually even display the weapon. And just a real quick scenario, if we're an open carry state, which means anybody that can legally own a gun can wear it out in the open. So if you walk up to me and you're going to attempt to rob me or cause great bodily harm to me, and you see my weapon, you probably will leave me alone. Now, if I put a jacket on and that same person comes up to me and I just show them my weapon, now under current law, I've just violated the law and I could be the one in trouble. And people just don't understand that.
Yeah, and it's critically important that they do. Kevin, it's great to have an opportunity to talk with you again, and we'll check in with you, you know, as we get closer to the legislative session and some of these things. I really appreciate your time. Representative Kevin Jensen of District 16, good to visit with you, my friend.
Yes, thank you, and call anytime.
And we will. Believe me, we will. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. Yeah, you give me... You know, you give me an open invitation like that. I'm taking it.